WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into an extended week. And, you know, I remember around here when I was a young man, Colts week used to mean something. We still have some residue of Broncos week after a 3-1 record, 3-1 start to the season. It's a little weird. I wanted to call it the quarter pole, Luke, because, you know, it feels like the quarter pole, but it's not the quarter pole. It'll be the quarter of the last game on Monday night of the Colts. It'll be the true quarter pole. But 3-1, so far, so good. And, I did promise and tease that we would discuss how insane these records have become. I mean, and I know, like, you pointed out, and you like your game notes, and you like talking about that, and people buzz about it and whatever, but did they really need to run the ball forward the last play? I mean, really? That's so hardball-ian, you know?
I mean, it was just silly. Let me be very clear, and boy, I didn't know so many people were so passionate about a record of the 1970s Steelers had about having so many consecutive games rushing for 100 yards.
That I never heard of until Sunday.
Like, right, exactly. I just think it was silly.
Joe DiMaggio, dude.
This is not at all me saying John Harbaugh can't coach or he should be. You know, like, it's so inconsequential in the big picture, but it's just silly. I mean, and look, it has nothing to do with, because I saw some reports that some of the Denver players were chapped after I don't care about that part of it at all. For me, it's your offense and your football team is hanging by a thread at certain positions right now. Why? I mean, it's just silly. Why? I thought, first of all, there was a great narrative to be written that on the day that the streak came to an end, because it would have been the first time since Joe Flacco's final start in Baltimore against Pittsburgh, that loss where he hurt his hip. And of course, they go into the bye week. Lamar Jackson comes out on the other side as a starter, and the rest is history. But it would have been the first time in the regular season they had failed to run for 100 yards. And they do that on the road against a tough defense, against an undefeated team. You're kind of thinking going into that one, uh-oh, did they lose? No, they won. And they won by multiple scores. Why? Because their passing game was so good. But it's just a sense of why. I mean, all you needed there was someone to roll an ankle, someone to roll a knee. Heaven forbid it's Lamar Jackson. Or how about this element? Because Denver players are ticked off that you're doing something like that, someone takes a cheap shot at one of your guys and you get hurt. So I rest my case on that. I'm right. Anyone else who disagrees with me, I think you're absolutely wrong. At the same time, you know, I'll file it into, you know, jaywalking, or, you know, you go and play in traffic, you might get, you might be okay,
so
and fine,
for 39
and good, and you'll forget about it after
at this
a while.
Point, you know, which is they're capable of doing, I guess, right? Will you look back, sure, and say that this was a cheap shot to keep it going?
I mean, it's just silly to me. It's whatever. I did find it funny because I had a lot of people clap back at me on Twitter about it, saying, oh, but these guys really wanted it. Lamar Jackson had no idea, and he flat out said it. And I don't think he said this in a disparaging way. He just flat out said, I don't know. I didn't know what coach was thinking. I thought we were going to go out there and kneel the football and be in victory formation. Again, I don't think we need to spend any more time on it. I just thought it was silly. And I thought, why? This year has been
John
so cursed.
John gets a reputation for this. He does, right? I mean, when I call it hardballian, his brother runs scores up. He's had his own little, you know, grudges and like all of that. Other people have had their grudges. This isn't petty. It's just sort of like unnecessary. Unnecessary.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And what I would find interesting is to do a Venn diagram of everyone that was up in arms about J.K. Dobbins getting hurt in the final preseason game where they played a series. How many people had a problem with that, but then you're okay with running a completely meaningless play in that spot just to continue a record that no one had even heard about, cared about, until Ravens PR brought it up over the last few weeks or whatever.
You remember when Strahan sat
John's a great
Brett
coach
and he let
whatever,
him, remember that?
You know,
you remember when that?
Yeah, started? Yeah.
Yeah, they,
I mean, I'll say
it's
this.
Right up there a little bit.
I'll say this. Instead of having to worry about doing that, how about calling better plays on 3rd and 1 and letting Lamar pick up first downs in some of those scenarios rather than just having Latavius Murray just run into a pile of bodies multiple times? Again, It's not a big deal. It really isn't.
I don't think they wanted Lamar running a whole lot on Sunday. I think Lamar not practicing this week is indicative of where they are with his body, his valuable body, the first week of October. And then to run that play, right? To your point. Yeah.
So it's way, for me, again, it's way more silly than some completely idiotic travesty or anything like that. We'll move on from it, and we won't even remember this. This thought is a little silly. But,
okay,
again, maybe the Ravens really care about that. I don't know. I mean, I don't think the Ravens care about it nearly as much, but people care about the fact they've won 20 preseason games, for God's sake. So who am I to say, oh, they shouldn't have done that, I guess. You know, whatever. You know, a big deal.
Luke Jones is here. It is all of our WNST coverage brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. Make sure you get out there. Luke will be out in the Owings Mills all week. Extra day this week preparing for the Colts. We will dissect the good, the bad, and the ugly. We've talked so much about Lamar throwing and Lamar running and the offense and all the young receivers and who's coming back to fortify all that. Defensively, I felt like early in the game, and there will be time. Every time they struggle, I'm going to say they miss Marcus Peters. And I don't know if I'm allowed to do that or not, but I'm going to do that because I felt like that there was some nastiness and some heart and soul sort of sucked out of it a little bit that they will not be able to replace. But that being said, you know, they did okay. Backup quarterback in the second half, and I think we can all assess Drew Lock for whatever he is at this point. But defensively, to go out there in the thin air and to hold up the way they did, and to really, you know, frustrate the Broncos, you know, punting. That makes 11 guys very, very unhappy on the bench.
No question about it. I mean, I think what you were hoping to see and understanding, one, there was some question about, okay, Teddy Bridgewater looked really good in the first three games and was really good against the blitz and had held up well against pressure. But you do look at those defenses he faced the first 3 weeks. And even with the Ravens, the statistical mess that their defense has been, where they've been really good at times and then really bad for long stretches of games, there was still the sense of, okay, how does that look? Denver's missing their two starting guards. Of course, no Jerry Jeudy. They lost KJ Hamler to a torn ACL. So, you know, so okay, they were down some guys, but the Ravens have been down guys. So I think for me, it was just encouraging to see the defense play that well. It wasn't a complete four-quarter domination, as you mentioned. You know, they put together the touchdown drive, actually had a lead in this game. But, I mean, they harassed Teddy Bridgewater in the first half. They harassed Drew Lock in the second half. Denver, with an interior offensive line that was really banged up and kind of vulnerable anyway. Those guys that they were missing weren't great players anyway. But when you go from players that are starting caliber to backups and you don't even feel that great about your starters, you're probably going to have some issues. And it was great to see the Ravens do what they did. Tyus Bowser with a big game. Madubuike with a big game. You know, Justin Houston got a sack. Adafi Owe had a sack. Calais Campbell, very disruptive. They played very well. And that was good to see because, yeah, you can say it's Denver and you can say, oh, Drew Lock played the second half. Well, Detroit wasn't a very good offense. We saw what they did in the second half against the Ravens last week. So I was very encouraged to see that. It was a
without a
really,
bunch of those names you just
really,
mentioned, though, too, right? I mean, yeah, you know, like, those were the guys missing in the third and fourth quarter last week when guys were winded, things were falling apart, their season looked to be unraveling a little bit, right?
Yeah, no question about it. And it was good to see him. I mean, we saw Jimmy Smith, you know, once again, do a nice job. Noah Fant, tight end, just like Jimmy Smith did nice work against Hockenson in Detroit. So you get him back, you forget how important he is, especially now where he's kind of in this hybrid role where he's playing some corner, playing some safety, matching up with some tight ends, which the Ravens have played plenty of tight ends early on in the season. And, you know, they really could have used him the first couple weeks. But it was a really good performance. And I was a little surprised maybe the Broncos didn't try to get their backs more involved in the passing game the way that Detroit did so well. But at the same time, you know, DeAndre Swift is a pretty darn good talent. And, you know, Melvin Gordon and, you know, Denver didn't really have that back that can necessarily be that dangerous as a receiver. So I thought they might do that. They did not. But the Ravens, they played really good defense, especially after that touchdown drive. I mean, it was just punt, 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 punt. I mean, they did an excellent job. And even late when Denver had a chance to score a garbage touchdown, Anthony Averett comes away with a pick. So it was very encouraging to see that. Now they have a chance to come home and, you know, you need to get Deshaun Elliott back. We'll see about, I mean, Derek Wolfe was just placed on IR. We know his back situation. I'm guessing now the goal is hopefully he's back after the bye, because that kind of, he could come back before, but the timing would be really close at that point. He hasn't practiced since third week of August. So you need to get some guys back. And we know guys like Marcus Peters, as you brought up, are not going to come back this year, but there's still a lot of talent on this defense. And I think it was really important for them to play a much more complete game. I think the closest they had played to a complete game so far this season had been the first three quarters of the Las Vegas game, but then it was so bad at the very end, it kind of wipes it out, right? This was a very, very good effort by the Ravens defense. And again, it's Teddy Bridgewater, three good games, but still plenty of questions about him. Drew Lock, who we joked and said when he came in the game, he ain't it for the Broncos. I think that was evident last year. But hey, you go out there, you play the team that's on your schedule, the team that's on the field that's presented to you, and you go out and do the job. And the Ravens did a really nice job defensively on Sunday.
Owe was brought in to be disruptive and home wrecking, not the promise of Terrell Suggs from where he was drafted, but maybe the next level of, we really think we got a steal and we got a special guy, and his stats kind of, if he had had a couple more sacks and would have gotten to the quarterback, he would have been taking 15 picks higher. Whatever those numbers were, that they liked him, they liked all the measurables and the wingspan and all these things that they saw in him. Boy, and I keep saying the quarter pole, and I'll continue to do that, all week long at four games, but he looks the part of a guy who's going to be here a while, and he's already where Matt Judon was in year five, literally, right?
I mean, I don't want to be disparaging to Matt Judon, because he's a really good player, even if he was never a great player, and that was kind of the knock on him and why you don't pay him a lucrative contract. Good player. I mean, Adafe Owe, he's still learning, and you can still see there are times where, the lack of not just experience being a rookie, but the fact that, keep in mind, this guy didn't start playing football until his junior year of high school. I mean, this is a guy who's not very experienced just with playing the game in general.
Well, think about that. Hang on a second. Let's say that out loud again. That means before he came in, Penn State, in a weird way because of COVID, right? Mm-hmm. That kid's only played in 50 football games in his life, probably, right? Like, yeah, literally, maybe not even that many. Like, literally.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'd have to do the math, and I don't want to do it on the off the top of my head, but it's not much, right? I mean, but it really speaks to, one, the athletic ability, and two, and we've talked about this, I'll continue to talk about it because it's impressive, the work ethic. He is someone that I think when the Ravens brought in Justin Houston in early August, there was a thought that get one more good season out of him. And hey, he had a sack on Sunday. And, COVID absence in week three aside has been a positive contributor for them on the field. But it's been what he's done off the field as well. I mean, Adafe Owe several weeks back referred to Justin Houston as Yoda. I mean, as far as mentoring. And you see them working after practice. I mean, it was a couple Fridays ago. I think it was a Friday. They were practicing inside because there had been some rain. And after media availability had wrapped up, we're walking back to the media room, and there's Adafe Owe working on the bag and just, working on some technique and just doing some extra stuff by himself. Practice was long over at that point. So it's a little glimpse into the wanting to be great, that growth mindset. There we go again with that, which is something that has always been there, but it's something that you can't necessarily quantify it, but teams want to do their homework on guys and know that hard work does matter. Being a student of the game does matter. Yes, you need talent. And I could be the hardest working guy ever wanting to be a great football player. And I'm 5'11" and 190 pounds and really slow. So I wouldn't be successful.
It sounds
so
like you have Ed to have talent. Reed, except Ed Reed wasn't slow.
Exactly. So I was a very mediocre, okay high school football player, but I digress. But with someone like Owe, you see that work ethic, you do the research and you do your homework and you talk to people at Penn State and you talk to people in his circle and you understand very quickly he wants to be great. This is a guy who studies. This is a guy who really gets it as far as what it's going to mean to be a professional. And you see that carry over. And boy, you just look at the athletic tools, the size, the speed, the strength. And that's where you're excited. And you say, I don't know if his ceiling is to be the next Terrell Suggs, but I'm really confident at this point, understanding, hey, 4 games into his NFL career. So like, let's not induct him into the Canton just yet. But I'm really confident. I have a high confidence level at this point. He is going to be as good as he is absolutely capable of being because of that work ethic, because he wants to be great. And, you know, going back to Penn State, as much as everyone was focused on the lack of sacks, if you watch him, and you know, Pro Football Focus was on this, they were someone who talked about this long before he was drafted in the first round, a guy who sets a really good edge, played the run really well, disciplined player, acknowledge that, yeah, he's going to have to develop some pass rushing moves to succeed in that way at the next level. But in the meantime, if you can set the edge and play good run defense and run to the ball and do those types of things and use your athleticism to your advantage, you're still going to be a really good player in the meantime. And then if you develop those pass rushing moves, that's then when you're talking about, or let's say dreaming about him being the next Terrell Suggs. So let's just think about it in that way. Terrell Suggs wasn't Terrell Suggs until years later when he became not just the pass rusher, but the dominant edge setter, the dominant guy playing the run, which he didn't do that quite as much early in his career. He was a little more situational early on. They had Adalis Thomas. They had Peter Boulware when he first came into the league.
He also wasn't a great student of the game in the beginning. I think, but you know, as he grew into this, he loved football more. He loved the lifestyle, but he loved football at the end. I mean, that was obvious. He went out to Kansas, all the stuff that he did, but he grew into loving football that he couldn't live without it. And I think being around football is what saved his life, quite frankly. And I think being a student of the game, he fell into that in a big way, and that helped his game. And when you're born that way, that helps a lot. When you've got that 4 games in, that you're around the ball because you're clearly doing your homework, you're using the God-given ability, but you're listening to coaches. He seems to me, the first thing they would say about him is coachable, right?
No question about it. And you mentioned Terrell Suggs. He had Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. Now, even though Ed Reed was only the year before him in terms of NFL hierarchy coming into the league, but he had those two guys. And then you look at Adafe Owe, he's got a Justin Houston, who Marcus Peters said it from the moment they brought in Justin Houston, because those two were close friends, played together in Kansas City. And we've talked about it a lot with Marcus Peters, him being the student of the game. Wink Martindale's called him a football savant. So he gives the endorsement saying, Justin Houston, hey, you don't have to look up Pro Football Reference and look at his numbers. You know, he's been a perennial Pro Bowl caliber pass rusher for a long time, but you're also getting this guy who studies tape and understands and loves to mentor young players and is not going to be that guy. We know veteran players can be kind of one or two categories. They can be that guy that is afraid of someone else taking a spot, or that guy who's going to share all of his knowledge. And Justin Houston said it early on. He said, I'm almost done playing football. I'm excited about working with this guy because I'm looking forward to watching him when I'm sitting on my couch in 5 years, seeing that kid be a dominant player in this league. So again, long way to go still, but 4 weeks in, you have to be really excited with what you're seeing from Adafe Owe. That was evident in the Kansas City game, but you know, you're just seeing it week after week. Even if it isn't the dramatic splash plays, he's around the ball. He's generally doing what he's supposed to be doing. And what more can you ask from a guy who, even as a first round pick, 31st overall, what was the biggest knock on him? A little green, right? Needs to develop a little more, but there are certain areas of his game that are very much advanced and sophisticated, and he'll live on that, and he'll be on the field and make plays doing that. And then with the other stuff, as that comes along, as he gets more experience and continues to work, that's when you get excited about having an all-pro kind of talent who could be your next Terrell Suggs eventually.
Reminder to move your mental health all month long with our friend Victor Brick and our friends at the Planet Fitness. You can go to Move Your Mental Health on behalf of the John W. Brick Foundation. Victor was a guest. Luke is going to be in Owings Mills all week. Luke, when we get together again, I know we're going to talk Brady and Sunday night. We're going to talk about the rest of the league and Ben Roethlisberger getting old and the Rolling Stones of Pittsburgh and all this other stuff. But I want to talk about the Ravens' resiliency on roster building, because you just gave some love to Justin Houston, who came in at the last minute and he's helping Owe, and you know, that part of the things percolating right now when J.K. Dobbins isn't around anymore and Gus Edwards isn't around anymore and Ronnie Stanley's not out there, Nick Boyle's not out there yet, and all these things have gone wrong, but they're 3-1. And they're well constructed, and it feels like they're resilient, and they get an extra day for the Colts right now. So as our friend and partner Coach Billick would say, It's all sitting there for you. It's all sitting there out in front of you. And I even got the hate on the Browns a little while on Sunday too, even though it didn't work. But I'm getting a healthy, for the first time in my life, I like root against them because like I never watched games where they mattered. So we've got a lot of things going on in the league. Luke's going to be in Owings Mills. All of it brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. Reminder, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour is alive and well. We had such a good time at Nacho Mama's. I mean, the crab cakes were great. The vibe was great. Dude, I walked – Luke, this is a true story. You'll hear this on the radio if you listen to the segment this week. I invited Dr. Steve over, invited Nancy Hafford over from Towson Chamber of Commerce. Our friend Chad Wiesling, his wife, Jen, is the general manager of Nacho Mama. So I got to sit with her. You can find those segments out. But right before I started to do the show, we were a little late, and I got set up, got my car parked. My back was killing me on Friday. Dr. Steve's coming over. I said to Nancy Hafford, I said, Nancy, I got to go to the bathroom before we start here. Just give me a minute. I had a lot to drink before we got over here. So I go back to the bathroom, do my business, wash my hands. I come out, and I'm walking down the hallway to do the show at Nacho Mama's. And I look to the left, and there's Charlie Ekman looking at me. And so they have a shirt there, you know, Charlie Ekman on the cover of a shirt from – it's got to be the early 70s because it's a Natty Bow thing. And I got inspired by Charlie Ekman. And I thought, man, this is the Maryland Crab Cake Tour when I just take an honest-to-God bathroom break and Charlie Ekman's staring at me on the wall, inspiring me to do Friday radio on a purple Friday. No wonder the Ravens won in Denver this weekend. So the Maryland Crab Cake Tour moves this week to Coco's. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. We're looking forward to having John Martin on from the lottery this week. I'm learning how the lottery works. It's total social studies course around here. We're going from football to great politics this week. We got Luke Broadwater on this week. Ted Venatoulis is joining us this week. We had John Cardin on this week, our delegate. Just great, great stuff. Make sure you're checking it all out at Baltimore Positive. I am Nestor. He is Luke. Plenty of football ahead. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.